This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman. Will there be a partial shutdown of the federal government on Tuesday? Congress faces a midnight deadline on Monday to come up with a spending plan to keep the government operating. Political junkie Ken Rudin is joining me to discuss the latest budget battle and also the upcoming fight to raise the nation's debt limit. You can join the conversation. Our phone number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. And by the way, political junkie Ken Rudin will be joining us on a regular basis on Cincinnati Edition, generally on the last Thursday of the month to discuss politics. And he's on the phone with me now from Maryland. Ken, thanks for being with us this afternoon.
I'm here.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
I thought we'd already lost you already. So, as you did on Talk of the Nation, generally your segment always started with a trivia question, and you've been kind enough to come up with a trivia question for our listeners today. So go ahead with your trivia question.
Well, just keep in mind that every Talk of the Nation trivia question was convoluted, and this may be as well. But anyway, okay, so Cincinnati is holding a mayoral election this year, and so this trivia question will be about Ohio mayors. Everybody knows that George Voinovich, the former mayor of Cleveland, was later elected governor and senator, two terms each. Before George Voinovich, who was the last Ohio mayor who went on to be elected statewide in Ohio?
So prior to George Voinovich, the last Ohio mayor to be elected to statewide office.
That's correct.
If you think you have the answer to that question, 513-419-7100. Again, 513-419-7100, and we will come up with some sort of fabulous prize if you have the correct answer. So, Ken, we're talking national politics today, and Congress was so kind to give us plenty of fodder to talk about this afternoon as debate continues about a continuing resolution. I heard a senator say yesterday that these CRs, as they're called, are, you know, pretty typical business. But from my years in government class, it seems to me that this continuing resolution is sort of out of the norm because Congress is supposed to actually pass appropriation bills by October 1st to fund the government. Is that not correct?
That's absolutely correct. And as a matter of fact, October 1st is the deadline to have the 12 branches of government funded and passed by the House and Senate. And the House and Senate has passed none of these at all. So they're not anywhere close to passing a budget. And so that's why the CR, the continuing resolution, is basically to extend the fiscal year 2013 as long as they can until they go into another vote.
And actually, this has been happening for the last several years. Congress has failed to pass its dozen appropriation bills by October the 1st.
Yes, but it just seems like it's worse than ever now because it seems like there's a battle on everything, and everything is an ideological battle. In fairness, there have been fights over raising this debt ceiling in the past as well. When Barack Obama was still in the Senate, he voted against George Bush's effort to raise the debt ceiling. So both parties do play politics with it, but never before have they come this close to, one, talking about a government shutdown, and two, defaulting on the federal debt.
And this continuing resolution has to start in the House, and it seems the House leadership was ready to approve a continuing resolution that was what they call a clean resolution, and some conservative Republicans won their way that it also included language that would essentially defund the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare.
Right, that's what happened last Friday, the Republican House, then it went to the Senate. Now, right now, the Senate, of course, we had the Ted Cruz talk-a-thon on Tuesday and Wednesday, and that's over with. It wasn't really a filibuster. It didn't hold up any legislation. But right now, the Senate is most likely to end a filibuster, a potential filibuster, on this bill on Thursday. And then anytime between Thursday and Saturday, Majority Leader Harry Reid will strip the language that the House put in. In other words, they will take out the language that defunds Obamacare, and then they'll send that back to the House. And then John Boehner has to act before the deadline of the end of September 30th.
And you mentioned Texas Senator Ted Cruz's 21-hour talkathon. We actually have a little bit of what he was talking about during the talkathon, including reading from a familiar children's story.
Do you like green eggs and ham? I do not like them, Sam I Am. I do not like green eggs and ham. Would you like them here or there? I would not like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them. Sam I Am.
When you posted on Twitter about your appearance here on our show today, you titled that Cruisin' for a Bruisin'. Now, explain what Cruisin' for a Bruisin' means.
Well, of course, that is an expression from the 50s, you know. But, I mean, basically, the question is whether Ted Cruz and the conservative Republicans, if they force a government shutdown, will the Republican Party pay politically for it? Everybody goes back to the 1995-1996, a 21-day government shutdown, where the Republican Party paid the price. Now, in fairness, if you go back to the 1996 elections, the Republicans actually gained 2 Senate seats and lost only 3 House seats. But the general feeling was that the Republican Party was at fault, and Bill Clinton, who was thought to be on the ropes in 1994, won an easy re-election in 1996.
Some people have talked about, did Ted Cruz sort of, even though he's in the Senate, did he somehow influence the conservative House Republicans on the vote that they took to include the defunding for the Affordable Care Act in their continuing resolution, and now they're being second-guessed because he really didn't have a plan to do this in the first place?
Well, that's what a lot of people are saying about Ted Cruz. Of course, a lot of people don't like Ted Cruz. He's one of the few people in Washington that can get Democrats and Republicans agreeing on one thing, and that is they don't like Ted Cruz. So that's interesting. But Ted Cruz did send a signal to the House Republicans saying that you do your job and then we'll do continue the job for you in the Senate. But he knew, he should have known better, and he probably did know better, that he doesn't have the votes to stop Obamacare. There's no way that President Obama, whose signature domestic program is the Affordable Care Act, he's not going to back down and say, okay, we're going to defund it. Now that this pressure is now back going to be on John Boehner, who says, look, we're not going to keep this going back and forth. We're not going to have a closing of the shutting down of the government, but we are going to have to get some concessions, and perhaps that means a delay in the implementation of the individual mandate.
Now, this wasn't what Senator Cruz did with his 21-hour talkathon was not a filibuster because, like you said, he wasn't holding up legislation. Is that correct? He just had the floor and chose.
That's correct. It was always going to end at Wednesday afternoon, and it did. But, you know, for all the giggles about green eggs and ham, I think what some Republicans and many Republicans found most objectionable was Ted Cruz's charge that by allowing Obamacare to go forward, it was the same thing as appeasing Hitler prior to World War II. And many Republicans, including John McCain, said that's way over the top.
And again, apparently Speaker Boehner is out today saying that they're going to wait and see what the Senate sends to them. And then he has a choice to either accept it, reject it, or make a change to it and send it back to the Senate, all with a deadline of midnight on Monday. But I do believe the Speaker today said that the Republicans likely in the House will not accept a continuing resolution that doesn't include some of their policies.
Well, exactly. I mean, there are some things he wants to add. Look, he knows that the battle to defund the Obamacare is a lost cause, but maybe he can get, as I say, a delay in the individual mandate, or perhaps some funding, spending cuts, or even a new language regarding the Keystone pipeline. But clearly, John Boehner is torn by trying to make government work. He's really a good government guy at heart, and he also has to realize that if it weren't for the Tea Party activities and the activists, the Republicans wouldn't have taken control of the House in 2010. So his speakership could be very well in jeopardy, depending on what goes on with both the funding measure and the debt ceiling battle.
And we'll talk more about that coming up. Right now, we want to get to some folks who have called in. They believe they have the answer to your trivia question, which was prior to former Senator George Voinovich, former Senator and Governor George Voinovich, who was the last Ohio mayor to be elected to statewide office. And let's see, we have Mike calling from Tulumbia, Tusculum with a guess. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, my wild-ass guess is Tom Lucan.
Ken, Tom
Cincinnati.
Lucan.
Well, Tom Lucan, of course, was mayor of Cincinnati, and he was elected to Congress, but he wasn't elected statewide to an office.
All right.
Ah, okay.
Appreciate
right.
it, Mike. Thank you. And we have another
and
Mike.
Do not confuse Tom Lucan with Buzz Lucan, as some people do.
And we have another Mike. This one, Mike from Clifton. Mike, go ahead.
You know, I originally thought it was Frank Lausche, but now I'm second-guessing myself. I don't know. Jim Rome,
well, Frank Lausche is a great guess. Fact is, he was mayor of Columbus, I think, or Cleveland. Yeah. I think I'm in Cleveland. And he was, of course, governor and senator. But that's way back in the day. I'm looking for somebody much more recent.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike. And we have Joe calling from Cleveland with a guest. Joe, go ahead.
Hi. Hey, Ken, I really miss your segments on Wednesday afternoons. I'm from Cleveland and listen faithfully.
Thank you, but we really do have Thursday afternoon here.
But otherwise, my guest is from Cleveland, Dennis Kucinich.
Dennis Kucinich.
Dennis Kucinich, of course, was mayor, defeated for re-election by George Voinovich, and Kucinich was later elected to Congress, but not statewide. He was never elected statewide.
All right, Joe, we appreciate your guest. Thank you.
By the way, Jay, how many shows mention Frank Lausche on the air? I mean, we're breaking ground here.
We'll be written on Wikipedia someday about that. Let's see, we have Dean from Westwood. Dean, go ahead.
Yes, I believe J. Kenneth Blackwell.
J. Kenneth Blackwell is the correct answer.
Congratulations,
Dean. He was mayor of Cincinnati in the late 70s, and then he was elected state treasurer and two terms as Secretary of State. So Kenneth Blackwell is the correct answer.
All right. Well, Dean from Westwood, I'll tell you what, I'm going to put you back on hold, and I'm going to let our producer get your information, and we will be sending you a fabulous prize.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Dean. Let me put Dean back on hold.
Dean didn't sound too excited.
Wait till he sees the fabulous prize. We're talking today with political junkie Ken Rudin, and perhaps all the years that he was on Talk of the Nation, you always wanted to ask a question, and you were competing with a national audience and could never get through. This is your chance. 513-419-7100. You were also on email talk@wvxu.org. Again, 513-419-7100. Before we took a stab there at the trivia question, we were talking about John Boehner's speakership. I think it was yesterday on Morning Edition, they were interviewing Steve LaTourette, a former Ohio congressman, and he said that Speaker Boehner's job was sort of like managing a wheelbarrow of frogs. What is it? I mean, what does he do in this situation when he's got so many people that are in that wheelbarrow that may want to jump out of the caucus?
Well, you know, you talk about difficult speakerships of the past, and you think of Newt Gingrich, you think of Jim Wright, but I think John Boehner has it more difficult than anybody else because he does have the majority, and he'll probably have the Republican majority for the rest of the decade, but at the same time, you have at least 30, for as many as 45 Tea Party conservatives who really don't like Boehner. They feel he's too much part of the establishment, too willing to compromise, too willing to talk to the Democrats. And there are many Tea Party folks who are absolutists who say, look, we were elected to promote this conservative agenda, and Boehner is not coming forward with his promises. So, and similarly, I think, you know, Mitch McConnell also has a similar battle. McConnell has a Senate primary next year from the right, but he also doesn't believe in shutting down the government, negotiating with Democrats. But at the same time, he knows that, you know, there are Rand Pauls and there are Mike Lees and there are Ted Cruz's, you know, breathing down his neck.
Where do you see this headed? Again, the Senate likely to pass something, a clean continuing resolution this weekend. It then goes back to the House again. They can accept it, reject it, or amend it and send it back to the Senate. Where do you see this shaking out? Is the government going to face a partial shutdown on Tuesday?
My guess is no. I mean, I'm wrong on everything else. My guess is no. I think Boehner needs to get something for his restless troops. He needs to ask for something that the White House and Senator Reid and the Democrats could agree to. So it may be either more spending cuts or maybe some language on the pipeline. I don't know if it'll be a delaying on the Obamacare, the implementation of the mandate, you know, the individual mandate. But he's got to get something. And I think both Majority Leader Reid and President Obama acknowledge that Boehner has to get something, or it'll make the Tea Party folks even angrier and less likely to compromise.
So is this something that we're not going to see it, but where Speaker Boehner and the White House will be negotiating this weekend, although when they've tried to negotiate in the past, those talks have usually fallen apart?
Well, yes and no. I mean, a lot of them do fall apart, but also a lot of them at the last second somehow somebody on a white horse rides to the rescue. In the past, it had been Senator McConnell, although McConnell is not in the same position he was a year or so ago. But I mean, there will be some kind of give and take. Look, nobody wants to shut down. The White House doesn't want it. And while some Democrats would say, you know, let the Republicans shut it down, they'll pay the price in the 2014 elections, I think there's some cooler heads who say that making government work is more important than making political points. So we'll see. My guess still is that something is agreed to prior to the deadline, at the last second, as usual.
Is this going to be one of those, I was going to say, last second, is this going to be like on New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, where we had the countdown clocks about going over the fiscal cliff? Are you sensing the same type of resolution, that this will be something that comes at the last minute, right before midnight?
That could very well be the case, although what's scary about this, and I say this in a depressing way, is that this could be a one-week extension of a continuing resolution. And so, in other words, we could just go through this again 1 week from now. The idea, of course, extending it for a week is allowing the negotiations to go beyond the September 30th deadline. But I think the American people are just exhausted, just watching us go lurching from crisis to crisis to crisis, and just us pushing the deadline down the road without solving anything.
And I think, did I read that the continuing resolution that the Senate is negotiating is actually only an extension until November the 15th?
It could be as short as November 15th. That's correct. It could be longer, but it could also be a week as well. So it depends on what comes out of the final language on Monday evening.
When, I think it was in 2011, Bob Woodward wrote a book about the debt ceiling limit negotiations in July of 2011 and August of 2011. And he was talking a lot about Vice President Biden and Senator McConnell. And I think he referred to Biden as the McConnell whisperer. And I think they had a lot to do with the fiscal cliff negotiations at the end of the year. Is that something that you could see, anticipate here, that could happen, that Joe Biden and Mitch McConnell work out something last minute again on this continuing resolution?
Well, I don't, and I think politics plays a big reason for why I don't think that's the case. And the big thing for Mitch McConnell, of course, is his 2014 reelection and renomination. And given the fact that he has a Tea Party challenger who does have a lot of money, and while the polls show McConnell with a sizable lead, of course, we're months and months away from the primary date, so things could change. So McConnell doesn't have the kind of freedom to be that free agent that he had at the end of the end of 2012. And he just knows that as many Republicans, Dick Lugar and Bob Bennett of Utah and other Republicans, have learned that these Tea Party activists can mobilize behind a strong conservative candidate in the blink of an eye. And McConnell is too wily of a guy to ignore that.
Where does this leave Kentucky's other senator, Rand Paul? He has already endorsed Mitch McConnell, but he's also been labeled the darling of the Tea Party. What position does this put him in?
Well, you know, he's been certainly more pragmatic, if you could use that as the right word, than Ted Cruz has been. Ted Cruz has been one of those absolutists, along with Mike Lee of Utah. But Rand Paul says, look, you know, we're not going to, let's face it, I mean, he didn't use the words that McCain used by saying elections matter. But he said, look, we're not going to defund Obamacare. We're not going to win this battle. Let's just see what we can get out of it and keep fighting all the way. But we're certainly not going to be able to say, you know, pass something. The Republicans only control the House. They don't control the Senate. They certainly don't control the White House. And so they're not going to be in a position to say, look, it's our way or the highway. So Paul seems to be more accommodating or realistic, at least, than Ted Cruz is.
Has this happened in the past, let's say like 100 years ago in 1913, before we had 24-hour news cycles and cable television? Were these kind of debates taking place in Congress and most Americans just didn't know they were happening because of the instant access to information now through cable and social media? Or is it worse? Is it worse?
My memory doesn't go back that far, and I know.
But is it worse now?
There's been tremendous debates over monumental issues about civil rights and war and taxes and things like that. I just don't remember. And to say it's never been personal is not true. We remember in the 19th century there were duels and there were, you know, gunshots and there were fist fights on the floor of the House and Senate. So we have seen kind of wild things, but I don't remember a time when it just seemed as petty as it does now. A lot of it may have been personal. It may have been one senator against another. But ultimately, when war was at stake or civil rights was at stake, the minority party found that it was a good cause to work with the majority party. And now there just seems to be no incentive for the two parties to get along the way they had in the past, even though there had been those major scrapes back in the day.
Am I wrong? Sometimes I watch this and I think it's almost a made-for-TV reality series, that it's like one crisis to another, and this time we could have multiple crises in the same month.
Well, they are major. I mean, you know, a month ago, everybody was saying, okay, the government is going to be shut down on October 1st. Now they're saying, no, it's not going to be shut down on October 1st. The real deadline is October 17th with the debt ceiling vote. But if shutting down the government would have put, you know, hundreds of thousands of workers at stake and closed the national parks and things like that, but defaulting on the debt ceiling, defaulting on the U.S. debt, would possibly cause cataclysmic, you know, reaction around the world. The economy, the world economy, could be really jeopardized, and we've never done that before. And I think there are a lot of smart Republicans who say, let's not take that chance. But again, even though President Obama says, I'm not going to negotiate on the debt ceiling, Republicans say, look, we still have to get something out of it, and they just very well might.
Is this also, Republicans have issues that they've been wanting to talk about, the attack in Benghazi, the IRS scandal. Is this actually hurting or taking coverage away from the things that they want to focus on?
Well, ostensibly they say all they want to talk about is jobs, and the Democrats say, well, all we want to talk about is jobs. But I'll tell you one thing, though. If you look at the polls on the Affordable Health Care Act, and even President Obama's own polls, there's a New York Times CBS poll that came out today, I think, that showed that the president's numbers are sagging. They're 43% approval, 49% disapproval. The numbers for the Health Care Act are not good. So there are some Republicans who say, look, let them reap what they sow. Let's let them have it, and the American people will realize what a wrong decision it was. But there are other Republicans who said, look, once this is enacted, it's almost impossible to get rid of. And even though it's unpopular, it could very well turn out to be popular. And our goal is to stop it before it reaches that stage.
With these many crises and the calendar getting ever closer to the midterm election in 2014, is the chance of Congress passing any major legislation like immigration reform pretty much off the table at this point?
Let me think for a second. Yes. I mean, you know, once upon a time, you know, the weirdest thing is that when the horrific shootings in Aurora, Colorado, and Newtown, Connecticut, when they came, everybody said, okay, this time Congress is going to have to pass some kind of gun legislation. And then when we were talking about, the Republican Party got beaten so badly among Hispanics in 2012 that there's got to be some kind of immigration overhaul passed. So those two were thought to be gimmies. Marco Rubio, one of the two Tea Party darlings, was one of the leading figures saying we've got to have a pathway for citizenship to these 11 million people who are here illegally. But now that's off the table. Now the guns, nobody's talking about guns. And even though President Obama, you know, once again went to the Washington Navy Yard and talked about the danger of guns and the insanity of everybody having a gun, Congress is not about to do it. And, you know, we always say, well, they won't get it done in an election year, but it seems like it's always an election year. There's always an election coming within a year or two, and so therefore nobody takes the risk. But two things like immigration and some kind of gun law was thought to be just no-brainers, and they're not happening.
We're talking today with NPR, or with political junkie Ken Rudin, 513-419-7100, if you would like to ask a question. 513-419-7100. Somebody mentioned this, can't remember what show it was, a few weeks back. Is there a full-fledged civil war going on within the Republican Party?
Well, there are differences. I mean, clearly the fact is that both the leaders in the respective House and Senate, John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, are really very fearful of the opposition they're getting from their right flank. We've seen this happen before. We saw Rockefeller and Goldwater in 64. We saw Eisenhower and Taft in 52. But ultimately, they seem to be some kind of, okay, you know, one side lost, and there was an accommodation, and the party grew united. I mean, when you think of Goldwater and Rockefeller, those two sides were so opposed to each other, and yet 4 years later, Richard Nixon was elected, so they didn't have to wait that long. But this seems much more personal, and seems to me much greater anger. it's true that the Republican Party would not be in the majority if it weren't for the Tea Party, but now the Tea Party seems to take its anger out on fellow Republicans. So every time you think there's a Republican who might want to, like a Lindsey Graham type, who may want to do some accommodating with Democrats, they're going to be hit with the primary thanks to the Club for Growth and other conservatives who think they're just, you know, too accommodating. And so it keeps both sides from making any kind of accommodation. And we talk about whether this is the worst ever. It just seems like, I don't know, a way out of this, because every time somebody says, okay, I'll be willing to listen to the other side, they're immediately called a rhino or a traitor or a sellout.
513-419-7100. We have Kevin calling with a question. Kevin, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Ken. Thanks for taking my call. My sense is, you said something along the lines that the electorate is getting more and more upset with the lack of action in Washington. And my sense is that people are getting more apathetic towards Washington in general, rather than upset to the point where they feel like they can actually do anything. I'm just curious about your comment on that.
Well, apathetic is a good word, Kevin, because I think when I think of the American people's so-called opposition to health care, I think it's more apathy as well. The fact is that the health care bill was passed 3 years ago, and President Obama is still trying to explain it to the American people and not doing a good job, in my opinion, not doing a good job. So I don't think people are just saying, I hate what's going on, I'm going to back a third party, or we're going to have a march on Washington to get these bums out of office. I think there is an apathy. I think there is just a rolling of the eyes and a shrugging of the shoulders and saying, this is not working, and, you know, maybe if government is going to work, maybe I should be focusing on state government, state legislatures, or municipalities, because it's certainly not working in Washington.
Kevin, we appreciate your call. We are talking with political junkie Ken Rudin, and we'll continue our discussion of politics in just a few moments. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman. We're talking politics today with political junkie Ken Rudin. He'll be joining us once a month, generally on the last Thursday of the month, to talk politics, and you can join the discussion. Our phone number is 513-419-7100, or email talk at wvxu.org. Again, we're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. And we're going to go to another call. Johnny is calling from North College Hill. Go ahead. You're on the air with Ken Rudin.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to talk with both of you. I have a twofold question. I'm wondering, in your opinion, what's the role of the district gerrymandering that was done and the power and control that the Tea Party has? And, it's debatable if President Obama won re-election or if Mitt Romney lost it. But given that he was reelected and we do have a Democratic majority in the Senate, how representative do you feel the Tea Party is of the electorate at large? It's like, are they more vocal or volume? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
We appreciate that. Ken?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think Tea Party does represent the Tea Party Republicans who are representing those districts. I think they probably represent, those congressmen represent Tea Party philosophy. We saw that in 2010, and most of them were reelected in 2012. But you did mention something about redistricting and what a role it plays. I've always said, and everybody's always said, that the hidden elections that people really need to pay attention to is not so much the Senate, but the governor's races and the state legislatures, because whoever controls the governorship and the state legislatures will control how the congressional districts are drawn every 10 years. So we know that because the Republicans control the governorship in Ohio and they control the state legislature in Ohio, the Republicans drew the districts the way they wanted. So a lot of Democrats paid the price and a lot of Republicans were saved. But next door in Illinois, where the Democrats control it, Democrats control the governorship, Democrats control the state legislature, it was the Democrats who controlled the redistricting process, and a lot of Republicans got beaten. The point is that this is not a new phenomenon. The fact that redistricting plays a role in winning who wins and who loses congressional seats, that's not new. But what is new, I'll give you this, though. In 2012, Democrats got, and if you add up all the races for the House around the country, Democrats got at least over 1 million votes than Republicans, and yet Republicans still vastly control more seats. So some people say that's not fair, but look, I'll just say one thing. As a Yankees fan, and I'm going back to 1960, and the Pittsburgh Pirates and the New York Yankees, New York Yankees scored far more runs than the Pirates, but the Pirates won four games, and that's the name of the game in the World Series. Whoever wins four games first, and in Congress, it's whoever, you know, has 218 seats controls the Congress. I don't know if that's a good example, but that just came to mind.
And these Tea Party Republicans, when they're considering their vote on this continuing resolution, whether or not it does fund or doesn't fund the Affordable Care Act, they're not so much concerned about challenges from Democrats. They're more concerned about primary challenges in the Republican primaries, correct?
That seems to be true with almost every vote Republicans take nowadays. I think everybody, the Club for Growth and a lot of conservative groups make these votes a litmus test and say, well, if you vote for online registering of guns, or if you vote for an immigration bill, we'll hold that against you, hold you accountable in 2014, and at the same time, we'll probably be funding primary challengers.
Again, we're talking with political junkie Ken Rudin, and if you have a question, 513-419-7100. 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Ben is calling from Westchester. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, I just had a quick question. I don't know very much about politics or what all is involved in it, but I, as far as I understand, this whole debt cliff that we're about to reach, in which the government might possibly default all of its debt, I was just curious, would that at all in any way affect the average American citizen? I understand that the government shuts down if they go out, but I was just curious if they do go ahead and default, would it affect the average American citizen at all?
Ken?
Well, that's a very good question, because first of all, it's never happened before and nobody really knows for sure, but if there is a drop in confidence in the economy, that could mean that more and more businesses stop hiring or curtail their hiring process. Now, the hiring, the employment numbers are not that great to begin with, but if there was less of a confidence in the future of the American economy, there'd be fewer purchases of American goods. There may be fewer jobs created. Ultimately, a lot of people thought that the sequester would be the end of the world, and for many people it was not. So there was a bit of henny-penny over the sequester battle, but I suspect that there's more of a serious risk with a default on the debt ceiling.
Ben, okay. We appreciate your call. Ken, with the sequestration, are there more cuts to come with that, or all the cuts in the current sequestration, are they already in place, and more could be negotiated as they go forward and talk about the new debt limit?
Well, again, you know, of course, President Obama says he will not negotiate on anything, but the Republicans say, and I think a lot of people agree, that if there's going to be any kind of saving of the entitlement programs like Social Security and Medicare, some of the funding, some of the money has got to come out of it. So I think Boehner and company are thinking that, well, you know, let's work on entitlement stuff, take some of the money out of it and put it elsewhere. But again, whether the Democrats agree to that kind of a negotiation remains to be seen. But nobody thinks, I mean, as scary as shutting it down of the government would be, people feel that a default on the debt would be much more frightening.
We had a question that someone wanted to know what it's going to take for Washington to work together. Doesn't seem to get anything real done. And Howard Wilkinson and I several weeks ago interviewed Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear, and he was talking about this, where he has divided government. He's a Democratic governor. He's got a democratically controlled House and a Republican controlled state Senate, and they seem to work together and get things done. Why can that not happen in D.C.?
Wow. You know, as I said, you remember, you know, there were a lot of I'm just trying to think back to the major civil rights bills in the 60s and the Republicans, there was a philosophical argument against civil rights or certain implementation of civil rights. The Republican nominee for president in 1964 voted against the civil rights bill. But there were people like Everett Dirksen, who was the Republican leader in the Senate at the time, said, look, we got to do what's best for the country, what's best for all citizens. And so ultimately, there are examples of profiles in courage where a senator will stand up, maybe a Southern senator standing up against racism or a Republican standing up against, you know, certain things that the Republicans are not known to do. And when one or more of those senators stand up, perhaps, you know, others will follow. Right now, it's not happening, although you do see a lot of Republicans talking negatively about Ted Cruz's tactics. And again, look, you know, I'm not just blaming the Republicans for this. There are Democrats who would love for this to continue, would love for the Republicans to get blamed for this. So both sides play the politics. But every now and then you may see a senator or two standing up and saying enough is enough. And again, if more senators do that, more members of Congress do that, perhaps in this idealistic view of mine, something could get accomplished.
Back before Labor Day, President Obama addressed the nation and said that he would ask Congress for approval to take military action in Syria, and that actually never came to a vote. And, of course, there's an agreement now for Syria to give up its chemical weapons. Who were the winners and losers politically in that that issue of whether or not to take military action in Syria?
Well, you have to feel that if there is no military action and no Americans will be sent overseas to do kind of battle in Syria, then that's a good thing and everybody wins. At the same time, it was fascinating to me. I know there's a lot of back and forth on whether Obama won or lost on this issue, but the fact is that he did not have his own party. You know, we keep talking about, and you asked earlier about the divided Republicans and whether the Republicans could ever talk with one voice, but clearly the President of the United States did not have the Democratic Party on his side when it came to implementing or authorizing war or strikes against Syria. You know, there's obviously an exhaustion with Iraq and Afghanistan, and you know, we know how successful U.S. Interventions in Arab lands have gone so far. So, but ultimately, you just wonder if Congress is not going to vote to punish Assad for using chemical weapons against his own people in the heat of the argument, which is right now. Will Assad ever pay the price for gassing his own people? I mean, that's the thing. I think, yes, you know, he could say, basically what he said was, I never had a chemical weapons, and if I did, I never used them, and if I use them, I'll never use them again. And then the agreement worked out with, you know, the Russia basically says, okay, just, you know, let's confiscate the weapons and everything will be over. But what it does is it cements Assad's role in power, and it basically does not punish him at all for, as I said, gassing his own people. You know, everybody's talking about 1,400 people who were gassed in Syria, but there's also 100,000 people who were killed by conventional weapons. I don't know if anything is worse than the other, but it's just an untenable situation. And at the same time, when you had people like John McCain and Lindsey Graham who said we should really arm the rebels, well, we've seen that the rebels could be al-Qaeda. They could be Islamic fundamentalists. So is that a better choice than Assad? I mean, we're left with awful choices, and I don't think you have basically winners or losers right now.
Just real quickly before we run out of time, what are your thoughts on the new president of Iran's outreach to the United States? And there was a lot of talk earlier this week whether he would have an informal meeting with President Obama or even get to shake President Obama's hand.
Well, you know, something in some strange, bizarre way, he reminds me of John Boehner. Well, this is kind of cockamamie comparison here. But in the fact is that he sounds like somebody who wants to change his country's relationship with the West. But at the same time, he knows that the Ayatollah and the hardliners who run the country are looking over his shoulder. And if he is too accommodating, he could be gone. Now, I'm not comparing the Tea Party to Iranian fundamentalists, but he's in a tough bind, similar, I think, to the way John Boehner is, in that he can't reach out too far without getting his hand chopped off.
this weekend, again, a lot of folks will be watching the continuing resolution. Will you be tuned in to cable news and all the Sunday talk shows to see what's going on to keep your skills sharpened on the continuing resolution?
Yes, but I will be drinking heavily.
Is that the only way to get through it?
My goodness. I mean, what it is, I mean, the strangest thing is that, especially if they punt it to next week or to next month, and we go through this all over again.
All right. Well, Ken, we appreciate your time, and you'll be joining us again.
Jay, thanks so much.
I've been talking with political junkie Ken Rudin about politics. And again, Ken will be joining us again on October 24th for another political discussion. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Rick Andrus. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Jay Hanselman.